Good morning, Colorado. Here we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we are injury attorneys, but we bring this show to you to answer your questions, solve your problems on any legal subject. This is not a political show, it's a legal show. You can call us, we'll answer your questions, we help you solve your problems. If we can't solve them on the air, we get your help off of the air. 303-713-8255. If you want to know about hit and runs, go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Get a copy of our book. We'll send it to you. Call us right now. If you want to know about accident cases, website, championsofthepeople.com. You want to know what to say to the insurance adjuster the first time you talk to them after an accident? Do you really want to know? Do you want to know what they're going to say to you and what they can do? Website, championsofthepeople.com. You want to know about concussions? championsofthepeople.com. You want to know about neck injuries, back injuries, neurological injuries, facet joint injuries? championsofthepeople.com. It's an information-loaded website. It's all there for you, ready to go. Our telephone number here, 303-713-8255. Welcome to all of our stations, KEZZ, Steamboat Springs, KRDO, KHOW. And Brad and I did a show yesterday that's going to air on a variety of stations on the make-whole doctrine. Sounds weird, Gary. Sounds complicated. It is complicated. If you've been injured, you need to know about the make-whole doctrine. You can listen to our podcasts. You know, when we do these shows, the radio shows here, when we do the radio shows on all of our other stations, they get put on our website, championsofthepeople.com. You can listen to them. You can watch the video podcast. You can get them on YouTube. We want you to have the information. Brad, let's talk a little bit about make-whole statute, because somebody's injured, somebody's in a car crash, they have health insurance, the health insurance company pays their medical bills. Let's say your medical bills are $19,000, then the at-fault party's insurance company wants to pay you $25,000 policy limits, and the health insurance company wants their full $19,000 back. What's left for you, and what about that?
Yeah, especially when you have continuing damages, when you're going to have injuries or medical bills in the future for that injury. And there you go, the health insurance company says they want their $19,000 back. It's always a lot of fun to deal with that kind of situation, especially when you look at the health insurance company, you go, why have you been getting my premiums all this time if now you get all the money back anyway from what I should be able to recover? Well, that's a big problem. And it's become such a big problem that the subrogation rights that they were saying, wait a minute, we have people who aren't getting enough money to really compensate themselves in full for their injuries to be able to pay all the medical bills now and in the future and all the lost income now in the future for their injuries, but yet the subrogation and health insurance company comes in and says, we want our money back. Well, we've always had the doctrine. Now we have some statutes and we've got the doctrine that says, look, you don't get that money back, health insurance company. You don't get it until the injured person has got enough money to make them whole, to be equal to where they were prior to the incident.
All right, so I want to continue talking about this make-whole statute because it's very, very important. We did a show yesterday. It's going to air in various stations. But if you if you're an injured victim in a car crash accident or other trauma, it can be another trauma. It doesn't have to be limited to car crashes. But you have health insurance, and health insurance pays your medical bills. And as Brad just said, you paid in the premium for years. Now they want to keep your premium, and they want to be paid back the money that you recover for your injuries from the at-fault party's insurance company. That's what's going to happen. That's what they want to do. Can you beat that legally? How do you get around that legally? And by the way, what is their right to even do that? I'll guarantee you, and Brad will guarantee you, because we live this every day, in your health insurance contract, which nobody reads, it's 2 million pages long, nobody reads it. In there, it says we have the right of subrogation, which means we get paid back. We have the right of subrogation against you and any third person who injures you. So they always want to know, did a third person injure you?
And you got to be careful about giving them that information. You want to be careful because they're going to go straight to that third person's insurance company, and they're going to try and get the money.
Right. And so there's ways to do it. It's a very complicated subject. You want to be sure to listen to our show. If you have any questions, you can call us as well. And so we're going to talk to Mike. We got Mike hooked up right now. Mike, you there?
Yes, I am. I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
What can we do for you, sir?
About 5-6 years ago, I bought a house in Aurora with my brother, and he's had some severe medical problems lately. Now, I gave him the $15,000 downstroke because I had a IRS lien against me and did not want my name on the title at that time. We moved into the house. My brother's gotten really sick lately, and now it looks like, you know, he's had like 8 heart attacks in the last year. So I want to get the house in my name somehow, on my name on that title, and or at least have him will it to me one way or the other if he dies. And I was just wondering what I could do about that now.
Well, when you bought the house, did you buy it in joint tenancy or tenancy in common? Do you remember?
Actually, I gave him the money, and he just said he had it in his drawer, and he bought the house himself.
So it's all in his name right now?
It's all in his name.
All right. We got to, to get it back into your name or to get your share in your name, you can do one of two things. One is we can just do a quick claim deed of 50% of the house if you're going to get 50%. If you want to be protected against each other's passing, though, we can have you do a joint tenancy. We can do take your ownership. The two of you take ownership in joint tenancy, which means that if one of you dies, the other one has complete ownership of the house automatically. It's as if that person's ownership went away and you automatically have complete ownership. The thing is now that's going to help you with respect to, you're going to have immediate recognition of your ownership right in the house. It's 50-50 in that situation. And you're going to be able to get the house immediately upon his death. Or you don't even have to go through probate. You don't have to do anything. It's just yours. The difficult part about that is that that's not going to protect you if you're facing something like liens from his creditors. If he has bills, or if he has liens, or if he has expenses that they're going to come after and get judgments against and try and take the and get a part of the house, they can lien his share of the house while he's still alive. And I don't know if you want protection against that or not.
Well, he doesn't have any outstanding bills. He's disabled and he's been out of work for 15 years. He's on disability. And but he's got severe medical problems because of all his stuff. But so he really doesn't have any bills. So I'm not worried about that part.
Well, let's talk a little bit more, Mike, because there is a new, as of 2004 in Colorado, there's a new thing called the beneficiary deed. And a person can draft up a deed to give it to somebody like you. There are certain requirements, like the deed has to be recorded before you die. But you don't have any ownership. The beneficiary deed transferee, you, has no ownership interest in the property until the other person passes away. And and there's a lot of estate issues there, so you have to take our advice on that point with a little bit of grain of salt, because there are many exceptions. But this beneficiary deed is pretty good. If the person makes the beneficiary deed, they can revoke it. Your brother could revoke it any time. But if he records it, then upon his death or passing, then the property would come to you, probably, underscore the word probably, tax-free. There's a big question about that. But it's a mechanism in Colorado to try to avoid probate, because if you got a smaller probate, you can do your estate by affidavit. You don't need these attorneys. You don't need the attorney's fees, and you can get the property transferred upon death.
Now I'm figuring that you you've solved your tax problem, right?
Well, I'm in the process of solving it. I'm paying them every month.
If you took ownership of the house, would you have danger that the IRS would lien the house?
Oh no! I only owe them $14,000, and it's not a considerable amount of money, and the house is appreciated over $200,000 since we bought it.
Well, either one of those deeds are going to talk. A joint tenancy, taking a joint tenancy, or the beneficiary deed is going to work. Why don't we get your name and number, and we'll help you get the necessary forms and documents and help you to put it together.
Oh, I'd love that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome very much, Mike. I'm going to put you on hold, okay?
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Give Kevin, and we'll solve your problem for you. And thank you for calling our show, sir.
You're welcome.
All right. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We are injury attorneys in our day lives, in our radio lives, right here. For you, we're here to answer any question, because we are the champions of the people. Good morning. Here we go. Welcome back. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack. Our law firm is Bell and Pollack. We have our offices in Greenwood Village, Denver, Steamboat Springs, and we do cases all over the state of Colorado, and we do them well. We have a legal game plan based on our over 30 years of experience for every person that calls us and walks into our law firm. All right, we're going to talk to John from Westminster. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you today?
Great.
Doing well.
It's funny because the gentleman before me just had almost a very similar question. It had to do with title on a property.
Okay.
And the situation is, to make a long story short, because because it's very long. But anyway, there's three of us on title. I'm helping my sister and my nephew buy a property, and I put myself on title to assist them. Now, I know we're in a community property state, and what I'm concerned about, my nephew has a wife. They're having problems, and is there any way in that she could, for example, if only the three of us are on title and not her, is there any way she can have any recourse or any go against his portion of ownership in that property if she was trying to get something out of him if they get a divorce?
Actually, there is potential that she can get part of the property. Do they live in the house?
We're buying it right now.
Okay, so the nephew and the wife have not moved in.
No, but she's probably not moving in either because they're estranged, and that's the thing right now.
Okay. Here's the problem you face with marital estates in that kind of situation. First of all, any property acquired in the name that they have together is going to be considered at the beginning. The court's going to start out saying it's 50-50 ownership, regardless of who paid what or whatever. If it's the name, if both their names are on it. Now, in this situation, you're not going to have her name on the property.
Right.
But what's going to happen is the court's going to look to see if he put any money into buying the house. And if he did, and that came from marital funds, and just about everything is considered marital funds unless you can trace back to an inheritance or money he had before the marriage, that it's going to be marital funds. And then his share, the court's going to start out with saying she owns at least 50%. Now, if it's not marital funds, then what happens is the appreciation of the home during the time that they're married will be considered to be a marital asset.
Gotcha.
That the court can either award entirely to him and do offsetting through other parts of the asset, or the court can say you've got to buy her out, or the court can say, well, you've got other assets that have that make up for it. But the situation is, if you buy the home, let's say he puts his share is $100,000. If 2 years from now his share is worth $120,000, if he bought the $100,000 with his own private funds that are not marital funds to begin with, the $20,000 is still going to be considered to be a marital asset.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
You know, another example I have, John, is, let's just say, and this is pure law, we're talking pure law.
Sure.
So somebody gets an inheritance or a piece of property, even though they're married, and so they'll say the wife gets an inheritance of $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
Then they get a divorce, as an example. And then the husband says, well, wait a minute, I want part of this $5 million. So that was separate property inherited by or given by or owned by the wife. It wasn't his, but the increase in value, as Brad just said, if the $5 million during the marriage increased to $5.5 million, the $500,000 increase would be marital property. The $5 million originally would still be separate property. And, you know, courts and divorce courts, et cetera, are very, they're courts of equity, what lawyers call courts of equity, and they can do that. But I want to clear up one thing you said. Colorado's a community property state. Technically, we're not. It deals with marital property, and so the laws of community property don't strictly apply. We have the concept of marital property.
That's right.
Gotcha. And one other question then, would it be possible to put it like in a family trust? Would the three of us be in the trust? Would that make a difference?
Well, it can make a difference as far as her not having a direct claim against the home, which she may not anyway. She may not have that depending on the agreement that you guys have, and I strongly encourage the three of you to have a written agreement over how you're going to dispose of the property and manage the property, who's going to own the property, and how you're going to live in the property and those type things. Anyway, because the people you're doing business with may be your best friends and your relatives and people you get along with, but you'd be surprised what happens down the road. And unfortunately, as lawyers, we see a lot of that. But if you put it into a family trust, you're still going to be facing the fact that he's a beneficiary of the trust, and that beneficiary value, to the extent that his value goes up, the court's going to consider it. If there's going to be any kind of divorce in the future, the court's still going to consider the fact that he has this extra value. About the only way I can think of that you can avoid this problem is, and she probably won't do it, is having her sign off on all rights and increase the value before you get do the deal.
And then my 2 cents worth on the trust issue, John, is that, yeah, you can have a trust. You can put it into a trust. And so if there's a big dispute or a big fight, the judge, what's going to control and rule are the rules of the trust, the trust document itself. What does it say? What does it say about this and that? What does it say about disposition? What does it say about ownership? And if it says it, it's probably going to be enforced. If it's silent on point X, point Y, point Z, then the court's going to default to the common law, and then we've covered the factors we just covered.
John, I want to be really, really, really stress the fact that that doesn't mean she's going to get the house, or she's going to get a part of the house, or she can get some ownership in the house. And your trust will protect that. What that means is when the court starts considering marital, the assets that the parties have and who has what assets, they're going to look and say, okay, this guy's under our scenario where I said 100,000 goes to 120. They're going to say he's got $20,000 in marital property on his side of the ledger.
Right.
And then they're going to look for an offset or set off on the other side to see what's fair and equitable.
A simple example is he's got $20,000 of equity on the other side of the ledger. It's a divorce case. I'm the judge. I see that there's a cash account of $150,000. So, yeah, I'm going to take $20,000 out of the cash account, order that be given to him. He has no more interest in the real estate. Have a nice day.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Because she keeps coming in and out of his life, and I don't want that to affect my sister's interest in the property or mine for that matter. And the other thing is, it's interesting when you said that if it's marital property, well, we're going through eminent domain on this property, that original property. The money he's getting is from CDOT, and that's money that's going directly to the closing. So it's not their shared asset. None of that money was joint for them.
Right.
Okay, then it's going to be really important that you identify. And you know, different courts are going to do different things. The judges have a lot of discretion in this, but it's going to be really important that you identify to begin with where the money that he got came from, how you trace it back, and keep that clear, and don't let him commingle any of that money before it gets into the purchase of the house.
Okay.
Then you purchase the house, and you're able to show now this is his private property. It's his separate and private property, and he took his separate money from property he owned before the marriage, and he put it into this particular house. Now that's going to protect the investment he put in. And like I said, now you've got, as the property increases in value, you've got a court of equity that's going to look in a divorce and say, okay, now you know that asset has increased in value, which is the marital portion. But like I said, the court doesn't necessarily say, now give her part of the house or go sell that property. They can look and they can say to him, well, we're going to take a car that's equal to the share of the marital property and give it to her, and that takes care of it. Or a court may very well look and say, well, what we're going to do is you can pay her off her increased equity portion of the marital property over time. Courts can do a lot of things.
So the court can recognize his interest in that, our example, $20,000, but it doesn't necessarily derive from the property. The court can offset it with another asset and pay it that way. But I've said this before. I'm going to say it to you, John. Pretend like you're the judge right now, and I'm in front of you, and I'm telling you, well, this all the situation happened, and we don't want that guy. He's not a good guy. We don't want that guy to have any money or anything from here. That doesn't convince anybody, does it? What convinces it is what Brad said, the details persuaded. This judge, this was originated here. They have provisions here, very specific. This is his interest. It's covered in this document. It's covered in this, and the money can be, the original source of the money can be traced. Wow, yeah, I'm not getting it. I got it. You see what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. And that makes all the sense in the world, and I appreciate that. One last question.
Sure.
If we draft a document like this on the stipulations of, you know, that who gets what and what the situation was before the money was even going in to purchase the house, does that document have to be recorded, or would you suggest that?
Well, so that's a great question, because we're called what's called a constructive notice state. A lot of legal mumbo jumbo there. Yes, I think it probably should be recorded, but if you're going to do that, you must include the address and the legal description in the document when you record it, okay?
You know, and let's get your number and talk off the air, because, you know, when we talk about drafting the documents, you know, there quite often there are ways to draft documents to saying that, you know, and to assure that his wife can never have an ownership say in the property, in the investment. I mean, businesses do it all the time, saying your wife can't, or the spouse. And I'm not saying wife, the spouse in it. Partners can't get themselves involved in the business in the event of certain events occurring. So let's get your name and number, and we'll talk to you a little bit more off the air about things.
John, I'm going to put you on hold. We'll get your information. And thank you for calling the Bell and Pollock Legal Show.
You bet, and thank you guys very much.
You're welcome. All right, you're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. What are you going to do when the rain sets in? What are you going to do when the legal rain comes? You want a free copy of our book? Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Download an e-copy or call us right here or at our law firm, and we'll send you a hard copy. What about that? We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back. Ready for legal rock and roll. Get your legal coffee, your legal bagel. And speaking of breakfast, we're talking Eric at Caitlin's. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How you doing today?
All right.
Doing great, Eric. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Let me run some specials by you guys real quick. We're rolling over last week's specials. Now, that breakfast special is an open-faced breakfast special. It is two slices of whole green toast. We're putting fresh avocado on that. We're going to top that with two eggs cooked to the temperature of your liking. I personally suggest a little bit of Tabasco or Cholula sauce on that. It's really, really good. And that lunch special is a Mexican hamburger. That's a 6-ounce patty. We're going to fold that in a flour tortilla. We're going to smother that with beans. We can get your choice of red or green chili on that. All that stuff is made in-house, by the way. We're putting a little bit of cheese, lettuce, tomato on that. You can get our homemade chips or waffle fries for a dollar more. That's the lunch special. And as always, on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, it's all-you-can-eat taco burrito buffet. It's only $7.99. That is Monday through Friday, 11 to 2. That actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. The umbrellas are up. The sun is up. The bottomless mimosas are on. They're only $10. Come on down. Have a good experience at Caitlin's. We'd love to have everybody come down and check us out.
Where are you located?
We're at 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of the Colorado Boulevard, and that's in the Glendale Shopping Center.
Hey, Eric.
Yes.
If I just want a burger and a beer, can I get one down there?
You absolutely can. We've got domestic here. We've got Bud Light, Coors Light, and you can come on down. Absolutely. You can get green chili, guacamole, bacon, pepper jack cheese, you name it. We got it. And don't forget, we got scratch-made pancakes. We got peanut butter chocolate chip. We got cheesecake pancakes. It's buttermilk batter. It's made from scratch as well. Can't beat it.
Best pancakes in town, Eric.
Absolutely.
You got big screen TVs, homemade red chili sauce, homemade green chili sauce, mimosas, outside deck, and
absolutely.
Umbrellas.
Absolutely. So many reasons to come and check us out.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, guys.
All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You remember Caitlin's Restaurant. You'll love it every bite of the way. It doesn't get any better than this. 303-713-8255. If you've got a question, we are injury attorneys, but for this show, we'll answer your question on any subject, even if it's injury and accidents. And right now, we're going to talk to Sherry about that. Good morning, Sherry.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling you because I was in an accident Tuesday, 21st or something.
All right.
And I didn't think I was hurt very bad. I knew I was hurt because I was sick. I got sick in my stomach, but I didn't call a lawyer, and I wasn't going to call a lawyer, and it turned out I kept getting a little worse, and about 2 days later, I believe, I gave a recorded statement to the other party's insurance company, so I kept getting sicker after I did that, and then I realized I wasn't thinking real good, and I was telling one of my friends that. I said, I'm not just forgetful. I said, I'll forget when I'm starting to do something, I forget it. And she said I probably had a concussion. Well, I had went to the emergency room afterwards, after the wreck, and they checked to see if I had any bleeding on my brain because I take blood thinners. But that's all they checked and told me to go to my doctor. Well, I went to my doctor. He was busy. I saw the PA. She never mentioned a concussion. And I kept getting feeling worse. And so finally I went to see my own doctor, and he said I had the symptoms of a concussion. And so he told me not to go to work, just to be quiet and everything. So what I want to know is, what happens to all the people who have small wrecks that really don't think they're hurt? You know, I didn't think I was hurt.
Okay, that happens all the time. And
I didn't read your article.
What's that?
I hadn't read your article on concussion.
Well, no problem. So I'm going to tell you what to do at the end of this, but that happens all the time. People that are not hurt, especially with concussions. To have a concussion, and there are certain requirements in the medical literature, you either have to have an LOC, loss of consciousness, or be dazed and confused in some form or fashion, and then you have the symptoms. But critically, understanding the legal medical picture here is that concussion symptoms don't always automatically onset immediately. They onset many times over time. But you gave a statement to the insurance company, Sherry. A lot of people don't report these things. They don't want to go to the emergency room. They don't want to go to the doctor. They don't want to do this. And then the insurance company uses it against you. And so,
that's what I figured.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'll tell you what, and I know Brad's got his take on this whole thing, but you need our concussion checklist. You need our concussion questionnaire. We'll give you that for free. And we'll help you further off the air, but I know Brad's got his take on your whole situation.
Sherry,
thank you very much.
You face something that's we face every day in our business, and it's trying to convince people that when they are in an accident and they think they're not hurt, it could be quite a while after the accident before they realize they are hurt and they start realizing.
Yeah,
symptoms.
I didn't want to hire a lawyer. I had just rented a car. I figured they fixed the rental car and take care of my emergency room visit and my doctor visit, and I was okay, you know, but I just keep, I'm not good. That much I know now.
Okay, so the insurance company for the at-fault party, they took your statement. They're not your friend. They're your enemy. We say it all the time. You're beginning to realize that. When they say they're going to take a statement, they're there to destroy your situation,
well,
and
I
they're there to use it against you.
Yeah, I thought they said they just wanted me to tell them what happened in the wreck. Then they started asking me other questions.
Yeah, and they expanded like crazy.
Yeah.
I hope the light bulb is going on for everybody that's listening. I hope the light bulb is going on because, you know, we use this example in our show. Sometimes you have an accident, you want to call up and get your car fixed, and so you're talking to the property damage adjuster, PD, property damage adjuster, and so they start asking you questions. Did you have your seatbelt on? Did you injure any part of your body? Did you have pre-existing condition? What does that have to do with the property damage?
That's what they started, and that's what this lady started asking me. But anyway.
Oh, sure, it's so misleading. And so what we need to do is we need to get your name and number off the air, and so we can call you up and talk to you and get you on the right track.
Thank you.
I appreciate your call to tell other people the same situation that's faced. It never ceases to amaze me how we can watch football players out there play football and get hurt, and they can show symptoms of concussion later on, and we believe that. But yet the insurance companies will tell you it can't happen to you in an accident.
One more thing, Sherry. You know, you go to the emergency room, and these insurance companies always say that. You didn't report symptom XYZ to the emergency room. You didn't report it to doctor number one. You didn't report it to doctor number two. When you went to the emergency room, they did a CT scan of your brain, and there was no brain bleed. That doesn't prove you don't have a concussion. Doesn't. And they say you had a Glasgow coma scale score of a perfect 15. All of that they use against you. You've got your own rights. That can be beat. I'm going to put you on hold, Sherry. We're going to call you, and we are going to help you.
Thank you very much.
You made a very brave phone call this morning, young lady.
Well, I feel like an idiot, but I just thought maybe other people better know that they need to not talk to that insurance company until they're feeling good.
I agree.
I tell you what, if you're going to talk to them, go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Hit the button that says, what are you going to do in the very first phone call to the insurance adjuster?
Right. I didn't know. I listened to you every week, but I had a concussion and just wasn't thinking good.
That's exactly what happened.
It never dawned on me to do any of that.
Sherry, we'll put you on hold. We're going to help you, and thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
All right. Take Sherry's information down, Kevin. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Let's say that one more time. If you guys want information, just information, you don't only want to contact an attorney. just go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. Get one of our free books. Ask for our concussion checklist. Listen to our shows on neck injuries, back injuries, neurological injuries, radiculopathy.
If you're gonna talk to the adjuster, just give us a call and let us get on the phone with you. Talk to us in advance, and we'll do the joint call together, and we'll make sure they don't take advantage of you. And we'll take care of it.
Right. You know, and so, if I got Stan on my head here in the studio, that'd be looking kind of funny, but I would be making our point. So that's what you need to do. Right now, we're going to talk to Rose. Good morning, Rose. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. Thank you for holding, ma'am.
What's going on?
Well, recently, the FDA sent out warnings about the possibility of permanent disability from taking prescription medications, the Levaquin and Cipro. They're antibiotics, and one of the permanent disabilities is peripheral neuropathy. I have peripheral neuropathy, and I was told it was idiopathic. They didn't know the cause. I've had it for almost 20 years, and then I heard this advertisement on TV, an attorney, and it caught my attention because he was talking about peripheral neuropathy that's caused by these drugs. And out of curiosity, I called the company, and they asked me a couple of questions, and then they sent me a packet of forms to fill out. I'm sure it's a contract to do business with them, but I wasn't sure. I was a little skeptical.
Well, you have the right feeling. You should be skeptical, okay? Because what they're trying to do is get free, quote, discovery and, quote, free information from you to use against you, period. Paragraph, period.
Okay, well, now, wait a minute. There is a class action lawsuit going on for this happening. I agree with Gary. It could be that you're having that kind of, that they're trying to get information to use against you, that they're getting too much information. But then again, the companies involved are Johnson & Johnson, Bayer Corporation, Merck, I think is involved in that. There's a mass tort claim going on, and Janssen Pharmaceuticals. Can you hold with us over the break while we go on break, and then we can talk to you in a minute?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay,
Rose, thanks for the question. Don't go anywhere. We're going to catch you on the flip side of the situation. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, 303-713-8255. In the mountains, 970-457-1009. We are here for you. We are injury attorneys in our day lives, our radio lives. It doesn't get any better than this. We'll be right back. Good morning. Here we go. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We are injury attorneys. We're here to answer your questions, 303-713-8255. Right before the break, we were talking to Rose about peripheral neuropathy and FDA warnings and a class action lawsuit. Brad, what do you got?
Rose, there are a number of lawsuits actually being filed individually and through class action that are going on against the companies I just talked about. Levaquin and Cipro are some of the leading drugs that they have a problem with.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about the fact that it's the symptoms that it causes peripheral neuropathy, and they fail to warn both the patients and the doctors. So there's some concerns about even the doctors knowing what's going on.
Right.
It's like I said, I don't know who manufactured your drug, but I'll bet it was either Johnson & Johnson, Janssen, Bayer, Merck, one of those.
Probably. I don't remember. It's been so many years.
Okay. When did you stop taking it?
Sometime in the early 2000s.
Okay. And its symptoms, numbness, pain, weakness, tingling, burning sensations, also going into your feet and your legs, spreading into your feet and your legs.
Absolutely.
And hands.
Yes.
So what we've got to do, I'm going to get you in touch with these people. I'm going to work with you on it. I'm going to help you. We're going to make sure you get in the right class action with the right set of lawyers.
Wonderful.
If you can take her number and name and number, Rosa, and we'll give you a call this week and get you set up with the right people to make sure that you're, and I want to find out who it is that contacted you and wants this information, because I don't want it to be one of the companies or somebody that's getting information we don't want them to have.
Okay. Rose, don't you dare fill out that paperwork until you talk to us further or somebody else. And by the way, we'll get you hooked up. But and you don't have to do anything, but at least you can get an informed situation there for you, okay?
That would be great.
I mean, peripheral neuropathy is very very devastating, can be very devastating. It can deal with the anatomic nerves, the nerves with regard to breathing, neurological disorders. So we appreciate your call, and so we're going to put you on hold. Please give us your information.
Okay. Thank
okay.
you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
I'm so happy you called.
Exactly.
So we can get
peripheral neuropathy. It sounds like we need a doctor. We're going to talk to Rodeo Doc. Good morning, Rodeo Doc.
Good morning, gentlemen. What a lovely day in Larkspur.
Exactly. It is.
Exactamente.
Truly, truly. I think it was Sherry that was the caller before the last one with the concussion problems, and I just wanted to comment quickly on that.
Sure.
It's important for the listeners to realize that even though you don't have a Glasgow scale that says anything, there's still a high probability of injury. I believe that virtually every car crash should be more strongly evaluated for that kind of a problem. Just an example, the recent literature suggests that people that have these mild traumatic brain injuries are at greater risk for developing dementia later. Well, you can't prove that in the beginning, but at least if you know what you've got, you can be watchful about that kind of thing. We know that these kind of injuries lead long-term in a certain percentage of people to thyroid problems. And so there's, you know, you've got the neurological, you've got the hormonal. It is just critical to evaluate these sort of things. And so, you know, for the docs, it's like have your people do the lab tests, repeat it throughout their care, and make sure you're not looking at a trend there that might suggest there's some hormonal changes going on secondary to the injury. This is super important stuff long term, not just the first couple of years, but the rest of your life.
Right, and so it doesn't matter if you have an unremarkable negative CT scan that they're just checking for a brain bleed when you go to the ER. It doesn't matter if you have a perfect Glasgow Coma Scale of 15. It doesn't matter. You can still suffer the injury, and I say this all the time. If you're in the accident and you have an acute injury like a broken arm or a fractured disc, they're going to find it, and they're going to see it, and there will be provable. With concussions, they onset many different ways, many different times, and many times over time.
Exactly so. And unfortunately, if you come into the ER with the broken arm, that gets the huge proportion of the attention, perhaps as it ought to with immediacy. But that doesn't excuse not documenting and working up the other stuff that's there, such as the MTBI. Got to do it.
Radio Doc, this comes back to the situation that we've talked about many times in our office and on the air is when you get in an accident and you've been hurt, you've got to try to get a hold of doctors who understand the related trauma and understand the injuries that can come from a trauma.
That it's just critical, and it's really not that hard. You know, in our office, we have a set of screening questionnaires that pretty well give you a real solid indication, okay, this person's got an MTBI, and now work it up more thoroughly, back it up with the specialized kinds of MRIs and the blood test and that kind of stuff. You just have to do that.
Right, and MBTI, what Rodeo Doc's referring to is mild traumatic brain injury, and mild does not mean insignificant. Mild can be very debilitating and significant.
No, the mild is intended in the medical literature to distinguish from the kind of thing where you have brain bleeds and that kind of stuff, the severe traumatic brain injuries. Mild does not mean that you're not affected, you don't have long-term risks. That just isn't what that means. It's a comparison scale.
Right, and as long as we're on the subject, I just want to kind of wrap this conversation up by saying the person, the victim, everybody needs to understand, the doctor needs to understand, but the victim needs to understand, have their eyes wide open. The light bulb goes on. You need help and you need to go in the right direction.
Yeah, and you know what? You can trust your family on this. They notice the difference when you might not, as the person that's been injured.
Absolutely.
Can't tell me how many times I'm sitting there talking to husband and wife about concussions, and I ask the injured victim, you know, do you have these problems? No, I don't. And the wife or husband said, well, yes, you do. Yeah, you do.
Yeah, you do. And it's important. Take care of it. Long-term implications. And you guys, I suspect, are going to get her in the right direction. And it's just super important.
Well, thanks for the call, Rodeo Doc.
You betcha. Have a blessed day.
You too, buddy.
All right, same to you. We're sorry we couldn't get to some people on the phone. Jana and Anna will be glad to, if you give Kevin your information, we'll be glad to call you and solve your problems. And don't forget the real estate show that follows us, the Barry and Larry real estate show. It's a consumer real estate show. They got the consumer's best interest in mind. We've got the consumer and person and individual's best interest in mind, just like they do. So they're a great group of guys. Don't forget to listen to their show. You're listening to Bell and Pollock. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. It's an information-loaded website. Watch our video podcasts on YouTube, our audio podcasts. Listen to them on our website. All of our shows are there, and you can pull them up and you can listen to them. It's a no-brainer. If you want any of our free books, just call our studio here, call our law firm, email us. We'll send you the free books. You can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com, and download free all of our e-books, and we got more books coming out. We're here for you. Bell and Pollock, the champions of the people. See you next week.